Welcome to another inspirational My Church podcast. We hope that this message will bless and encourage you. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, please visit livelove.ca.
What we're going to do is we're going to get into some serious subject matter that we're going to read. We're going to read about Jesus' death, but I think there's something in his death that's incredibly redeeming, something that we can take and apply to each and every one of our lives and situations. And although this was 2,000 years ago, this story is so applicable to each and every one of our lives today. So this is what it says in Matthew 27. Matthew's telling this account, and it says, along the way, they came across a man named Simon, who was from Cyrene, and the soldiers forced him to carry Jesus' cross. They went out to a place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, and the soldiers gave Jesus wine mixed with bitter gall, but he had tasted it and refused to drink it. Now, if we take Luke's account of this same story, Luke says this in Luke 23:34. Jesus said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. God, we thank you for today. We thank you for your word. We're expecting today to hear from you. We're expecting to have a moment here with you today, God, that will be changed forever. We don't want to just come in here and just hear words, God, but we want to actually hear your word for us today. In Jesus' name, and everybody said, amen. Awesome. Hey, thanks, Colin. Give Colin a round of applause. He's an awesome guy. There's a lot of offensive things in the world right now. There's a lot of offended people in the world. There's a lot of things to be offended about in the world. Like there's a lot of stuff. Like even the state of politics, there's lots of reason to be offended. Vegans, there's a lot of reason to be offended. The fact that Survivor is still on the air, there's a lot of reasons to be offended in this world. I see some of the vegans looking at me. You're offended right now. I've got a sermon that's going to speak to you. But I've noticed, in this world especially, there's a lot of offended people online. Like on social media, there's a lot of angry people, and it always starts the same. I don't know if you've experienced this or seen this. Maybe my Facebook is different, but there will be somebody who will just say like the most asinine thing, like it makes no sense. And then you see like the serial video sharers, like the people who just share videos from everywhere as if it's fact. It's like, yeah, see, Obama was raised by wolves. I told you, like, it was on The Onion. It must be true. Like, there's these people who go around sharing, and it descends into chaos. And then at some point, somebody in the comments is like, no offense, which means there's going to be something deeply offending following that. And it descends into meaningless. I remember I was in Nigeria, and I've told this story before, but we went to Nigeria, my dad and I, and we got invited to this pastor's prayer retreat. And I was like, man, I love Jesus, love talking to him. This is going to be great. So we go to this pastor's retreat, and we're sitting there, and I can hear the band. They're starting to play and like get ready for their set. And there's gospel music. I love gospel music. So I'm like, I'm ready to connect with God. And so they're passing around some fruit. They're like, hey, yeah, so here you go. Here's some like some fruit and stuff for the all-night prayer and fasting. I was like, sorry, what? First off, I've been eating food my whole life, need it to live. And so the fasting thing didn't sound great to me. And then secondly, the whole idea of like being late, like all-night prayer, I've done it once before, but I'm the type of kid, like even like growing up when I was a kid, like everybody would be like, you know, like no consequence when you're a teenager. Like, yeah, let's stay up all night. I'm like, ah, like it's 9:30. Like guys, like let's call it. Like, I mean, we've got a busy day tomorrow. There's a lot of things in play. Like, I just think we should like call in a night. And so we're in this thing and around like 9 o'clock, I'm feeling pretty fresh. And I don't know if you know any Africans, or maybe there's some Africans in the room, but they know how to pray. Like they, like, it's terrifying, like their charisma and stamina. Like I'm just like, and I've been in the church thing my whole life, and like these guys are like doing this and like just praying and like just going for it. By 10 o'clock, I'm just like done. Like I'm doing like one of the prayer things, like where you just sit there and you're just like, okay, yeah, God, wow. You're still trying to keep it together, but then the song comes on. You know your song. You're like, you are Alpha. And you're like, okay. And Omega. Like, and you're just trying to connect. Now, 12 o'clock rolls around. Like, midnight rolls around, and I'm just, like, done. I'm beside myself. Now, I ended up leaving the prayer meeting. And this is the thing. I would have come out of this whole thing unscathed has it not been for the whistle lady. 2 o'clock in the morning, there is this lady beside me, and the music is still just like pulsing. You know when there's like really bad sound too, and I'm like this all the time? And so I'm like hearing this, and she's just beside me just blowing a whistle with a frequency straight from hell. Like I didn't under... And I'm doing one of those things, you know when you like don't have the confidence to really talk to somebody, but you look at them until they look at you, and you say, okay, yeah, she got it. I'm gonna write her a strongly worded email after this. Like, I was offended. I was deeply offended. I was praying against her in that moment. But it's a crazy thought that you can be in the middle of the presence of God and preoccupied with offense. You can be in the middle of something great and preoccupied with offense. I wonder for you if you've ever made offense a preoccupation in your life. And I look at me, and when I look at offense, it's one of the most human things that we can do, because ultimately, we all get hurt in life. And I think one of the most human reactions is to be offended. I wonder for you, maybe you're even dealing with some offense in a family dynamic. With the amount of families in here and people in here, there's everybody has something when it comes to the family. Like, there's that one person you don't talk to at Christmas. There's that one person who's going to cause a storm at the wedding. There's that one person, like, who's going to say something and take it a little bit too far. You know, maybe for you it's at work. Maybe you're facing this ceiling, you know, a glass ceiling, and you're going, man, you're harboring offense because of the opportunities that you should have had, could have had, would have had, had it not been for maybe this person or what they said or what they didn't say. Maybe you're offended by church. Maybe even after that story I just told you, like, this can't be a church. This can't be real. Like maybe in church you've been offended. And actually, if I could tell you the truth is, spend enough time long enough with anybody, you're going to be offended. And the church is no different. And I think there's people even who bounce around community to community, church to church, because they haven't dealt with offense. And you can be right in the middle of something God has for you, right in the middle of something so special, and yet we can become preoccupied with offense. Cue Jesus' story. He's there, and this is a guy who literally has given his whole life to humanity. He's given his whole life to serving these crowds of people. He's in the margins, he's praying for people, he's sitting down with a well, and he's literally just trying to catch a breath and changes a whole village because of one conversation with one lady in John 4. He's going around taking demons out of people, he's healing people, he's restoring people, he's teaching in synagogues, he's doing all of this stuff to serve humanity, and yet the same crowd now wants to kill him. And he's gasping for air. And I think in life, we'll never avoid hurt. And yet Jesus on the cross makes this decision. And rather than looking at that hurt that he has, imagine this isn't just a crowd of people. These are his kids. These are the people that God loves the most. These are the people that he's dying for. And in that hurt, where he could have chosen offense, where even the people around him said, oh, if you're really God, call down all these angels, call down everything, just wipe all of us out, yet he chooses forgiveness. So just forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And in life, I think when hurt happens, we have two options. We can either take offense or offer forgiveness. And today, that's really what I want to talk about. That's my big idea, is that the greatest life we can live is a life where we don't take offense, but we offer forgiveness. Now, easier said than done. How do we do that? Because even right now, you might be thinking about that person. That might have just triggered something where you're like, yeah, but that person. No, but that situation. And this is the thing, is before I get into this talk, I want to say what I'm not here to do, okay? There's a few things that I haven't come to do today. So one, I'm not here to belittle anything that's happened in the past. I understand in a room this size, people have been through a whole lot of things, maybe traumatic experiences. And in saying, oh, just forgive people, I'm not trying to belittle any experiences that have happened to you. Secondly, I'm not telling you to just forget about it either. I'm not saying that the things that happened to you, that you won't carry them, that you won't bring them to remembrance. I'm not just saying like, oh, don't worry about it, it's all good, just who cares. Like, I'm not telling you to forget about it. I'm not absolving people of responsibility. There may have been people who crossed you and hurt you legitimately, and those people may have to pay for it in some way or form or whatever. I'm not absolving them of any responsibility, and I'm not trying today to take away your feelings of hurt. I'm not trying to do any of those things, but what I am trying to do is to say there is responsibility that you have no matter what's happened, no matter how you feel about it, and you can either take offense or you can offer forgiveness. And I think that these two things, this choice, actually has a lot more to do with you. It actually has a lot more to do with what God has on your life than it does to the other people that you're trying to forgive. And so that's really what I want to spend my time on today, is to talk about these types of issues and explore how learning to forgive, we can actually learn to move forward. In learning to forgive, we can actually learn to move forward. So this is my first point. If you are taking notes, you can write this down. Offense doesn't do what you want it to do. Offense doesn't do what you want it to do. So I think in society, in culture, humanity, we all kind of have this underlying innate trait where we want to make sure that all things are equal. We want to create a system and a society of equality, I think, for the most part speaking. Maybe you could get into some reasons why not, but I think generally speaking, like even when I was growing up, we were a family of eight. When it came to eating food, I would literally be eating food, like eating chicken, waiting to see like who was going to take that last piece, because there was not going to be a world where I had less chicken than my brothers and sisters. Like that was just how we operated. We wanted everything to be equal, all things to be equal. Literally, when Rebecca and I got married, I'd be like eating, like covering up my food, like prison rules or something. She's like, it's okay, it's just us two. You're gonna be all right. I've got some offense that I need to deal with, but this is the thing, we want things to be fair and equal. And so this is why Jesus, I think, says in Matthew 5, he says, you've heard it said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. I think that that's still true today, that kind of karma-type philosophy is if I do good, I should probably get some good. If somebody does bad to me, something bad should happen to them. If somebody takes from me, I should take from them. And I think in any sphere, we could all kind of agree that that's kind of the underlying principle that we work on. And yet this is the thing, is when we take offense, it's not doing what we think it's going to do. I think when we take offense, that cold shoulder or that distance or those words toward that person or whatever you do to show that offense actually isn't equaling the playing field. And yet that's, I think, what we want it to do. We want that person to feel remorse. We want that person to pay. And so we do all of these things in order and pattern our lives so that they'll have to pay. And yet ultimately, when I look at it, most of the offense in my life has actually fenced me in from God's best. Think about what it says in Proverbs 18:19. It says, a brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like bars in a castle. Let me tell you, when you have offense, it's not the other person behind bars. It's not the other person who's unyielding. It's actually us. And yet we use offense as a tool, going, now they'll see. Now they'll pay. I have the right to do this. They're going to feel something or do something or pay somehow. And yet ultimately it doesn't seem like it actually does what we want it to do. And this is the crazy thing about offense. Offended people, there's places they can't go. There's people they can't talk to. There's things they can't do. I wonder for you now, if in your work there's places you can't go, there's conversations you can't have. In your family, when you sit down at that dinner table, there's conversations that can't be had. There's people that you can't talk to anymore. There's interactions that you can't have. You're walking on eggshells, and yet you're the one offended, and it seems like you're the one who's trapped. And that's the crazy thing. And yet, listen to what Jesus says in Matthew 5, if we extend out what he says, the world says, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, right? Just if something's happened to you, if somebody takes something from you, you take something from them. But I tell you, don't resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them to the other cheek also. Okay, that's, okay, you sure, Jesus? That might be a typo. He keeps going, if anyone wants to sue and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. I'm really not sure about, we need to fact check this whole. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. For you've heard it said, love your neighbors and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children as your children of your Father in heaven. All right, that's a whole lot to really digest. If you really consider what Jesus is saying, that the underlying core principle that we operate our lives on is of equality. If somebody takes something from me, then I should be able to take something from them. God goes, no, you should actually just freely give. And not only that, go over and above in giving. Okay, that's kind of a crazy thought when you really consider what Jesus is asking us to do. This is the thing. I think we can hear this in theory. No. Think about that aunt that you know, who says those things at Christmas time. You're like, oh, like I can't. Think about her for a sec, and now think about this story. Think about that boss, and now think about what Jesus is asking. Think about the guy who always takes your report, repackages it as his, and then think about this story. See, now it becomes a little bit harder to reconcile. But I got to look out for myself. I mean, at some point, I have the right to be offended. I mean, at some point, I should be able to make sure that that person pays or say something or do something, because, I mean, that this can't be right. And yet Jesus says, look, if you really want to live a free life, this is what you have to do, because this is the thing. Is offense takes something, but you can't take something from someone that they've already given. Wow. See, and there's actually a liberty in generosity. There's actually a liberty in forgiveness, because you can't take something from me that I've just given to you. You can't steal my joy if I just give you love and compassion. You can't take my things if I'm just willing to give my things. And I think this is the underlying principle that Jesus is getting at, is where the world says, no, just take, which actually entraps us, even though really what we want is equality. When we give, the paradox of it is it actually frees us. And I wonder, where are the places in your life where you need to start to not look with the eyes of offense, but start to look with the eyes of going, what's going to make me more free? How can I start to give recklessly? But see, this is the thing, is I think inside, now we actually have to reconcile, how much do we trust God? If I gave all of this stuff to this person, would I still be taken care of? If I offered grace upon grace upon grace, would I still have my needs met? And all of a sudden, now we have to really understand, how present is God in our situation? Offense you can do all by yourself. And it's not hard, and it's easy, and it feels great. It really does, for a while. But I think the greatest thing that we can do is offer in those places where people take from us, is to offer and say, here you are. So I wonder for you, is it really doing what you think? Consider another story. Consider Joseph. So Joseph in the Bible, if you haven't heard of this story, here's a guy who has a conversation and it leads into a really bad thing. He has this dream and he's telling his brothers, he's like, guys, like, I just had a dream. I was basically the best. And then he comes in and he's like, yo, dad bought me a new coat, and his brothers sell him into slavery. Bit of an overreaction if you're asking me, but hey, like all families are different. They sell him into slavery. That's a crazy thought. Years and years later, Joseph goes through this up and down thing, and you can read the story in Genesis, towards the end of Genesis, but there's this point where Joseph meets his brothers for like the first time in a long time. And he's overwhelmed with emotion, and this is what he says to his brothers. He says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so that I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I'll continue to take care of you and your children. So he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. You know, the thing that actually strikes me about this story is Joseph had every reason to be offended. His brothers threw him into prison. He had to live this life away from his father. Like, just the craziness of that, like the baggage of that, I mean, would be enough for anybody to rightfully be offended. And yet he sees his brothers and welcomes them in and goes, no, it's all good. I love you guys. But listen to this. It says, I'm going to take care of you and your children. So there was actually people that Joseph had never met. There was people Joseph had never interacted with. There was a community of people that Joseph's forgiveness was predicated on their sustenance, or their sustenance was predicated on Joseph's forgiveness. I wonder, who are the people who are waiting on your forgiveness? I wonder who are going to be the people who are going to say, thank God he was able to forgive that person. Because, man, I really needed him in that situation. Thank God she really reconciled that thing with her mom. Because, man, I really needed both of them as role models. Thank God this person got over that offense at church. Because, man, I've got a family of people. And my dad brought me to church because he got over that offense. I wonder what forgiveness is on the other side. What's happening on the other side of your forgiveness? Because your life is not just about you. And had Joseph had been offended, which he rightfully would have been able to by our standards in the world, then there would have been a whole community of people that wouldn't have eaten. I wonder who's the community of people that are waiting on your forgiveness, because offense doesn't do what you think it's going to do. Here's the other thing. Forgiveness is a decision. If you're writing this down, if you're taking notes, write this down. Forgiveness is a decision. I don't know if you've ever done this, like where you're expecting, you do something really good and like deep down, you don't ask for it, but you're expecting a reward. Maybe this is literally just me, because you're all looking at me like, no, I've never done that before. But I was house sitting for somebody, and, you know, we didn't talk about, you know, financial things or money or any of that, being paid for it. But at the end of the conversation, I'm handing over the keys. It's like, yeah, I took care of everything. Everything's been fed. You know, cats have been fed. I hate them, but, you know, they're all good. They're still alive. Like, you know, it's all clean. I cleaned up afterwards. And you keep that conversation going because you're waiting for them to, like, hand you something and be like, well done, good and faithful servant. Like, you know, that's kind of where I was at. And they're like, hey, like, is there anything else you need? It's like, is there anything else you forgot? Like, I don't. But this is the thing, is we can do good things and still expect people to pay for it. I wonder if that's how you view forgiveness. I'll forgive. But I'm still expecting that something's going to happen. Like, do you know forgiveness with, like, things attached to it? Like, maybe for you, when you forgive, you need to feel like you've like, let it all go. There needs to be this epiphany moment. Okay, I forgive you, and now I feel released, and I feel totally better. What if that doesn't happen? You know, or maybe for you, you're looking for, okay, I'm going to forgive this person, and then they're going to feel sorry. And they're going to go, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe I did that to you. What if that doesn't happen? Or maybe you're just forgiving, and you just want to let them know how much you hate them. Like, you know, like one of those people is like, hey, like, I need to talk to you. Like, I really hated you, and I forgive you. It's like, okay, so you're just telling me you really hated me. Like, that seemed unnecessary. But this is the thing, is we like to do this. We like to forgive, but then there's something with it. There's something that comes with it. What if none of those things come with it? What if the feelings never catch up? What if the person never feels sorry? Then could you forgive them? Listen to what it says in Luke 23. I ended that beginning passage that I read with, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. So think about this. This is the most important moment in history. Jesus is literally looking at these people. He's looking at the soldiers around him, the crowd around him. I'm sure he sees humanity and every single person who will occupy space and breath on this earth. And he's looking at all of them and saying, I forgive you. This is a powerful moment. Look what Luke follows up with. And the soldiers gambled for his clothes by throwing dice. Father, I forgive them. Can you believe that there's 20 seasons of Survivor? That's a crazy thought. But I wonder what happens when somebody doesn't feel anything. What happens when there's no epiphany? When there's no remorse? What happens if you can't even say it to their face? And yet the model that I see from Jesus is forgiveness is much less a feeling or caprice or any of these things, as much as it's just a decision that you make in your heart to say, I choose to be generous. If you live generosity and forgiveness to your feelings, you'll never forgive anyone. Or if you do, you'll be offended just as quick. And yet Jesus makes this decision for humanity when there's literally people asking him and taunting him to call down all of heaven's forces, where there's people at the base of his cross not recognizing and realizing who he is, where there's a crowd of people that he loves so deeply and that they hate him so much. And he turns to them and makes a decision. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. I wonder for you where you need to make a decision to forgive. Maybe it's that person at work, and you just need to make a decision and say, that's it. I don't need an epiphany. I don't need a sunset. I don't need to be journaling about it. I just need to make a decision right now. I forgive them. And my feelings can catch up with that if they do. Their decision and their remorse or whatever they did to wrong you might or might not come about. But I'm going to make a decision for myself and in light of what God has done to make that decision to forgive. Maybe it's in your relationships and you need to do that with some family members. And just make a decision and say, I'm putting a line in the sand. I'm going to decide today to forgive. And you might have to remind yourself of that week in and week out. And I'm not saying that this is easy stuff to do. Okay, so please don't hear me like I'm just like flippantly saying like, hey, make a decision to do that in light of maybe years of neglect or hurt or any of that stuff. But at the same time, we do have to recognize that you may never feel ready to forgive. You may never feel like you're in the right place to be able to let go of that offense. And yet the thing is offense doesn't do what you want it to do. Forgiveness is the only thing that's going to give you freedom and liberty. So Jesus, he actually gives us the roadmap. How do we actually do that? How do we actually start to forgive? He says in Luke 6, but you who are willing to listen, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who hurt you. Again, that's a crazy thought. Love them, bless them, pray for them, add value to them. So how do we actually do that? And I mean, even when you really think about it, just as a side, when you start to pray for somebody, it becomes very hard to occupy negative feelings towards them. I wonder if maybe your step is literally just starting to say, I'm just going to pray for them every day. It might actually start like a David prayer where it's like, God, like just break their teeth, right? And then maybe then after that, it'll start to kind of graduate in a prayer where you're like, eh, like I hope that they like, you know, don't have too much success. And then you start to go, I hope they're okay. Okay, fine. I hope that they have a retirement. Okay, you know what, God, I really hope that this person comes into what you have. Because the more you talk to God about them, the more you have to see them how God sees them and the potential that's still on their life. I wonder if just on a practical note, if maybe one of you today needs to actually just make a reminder in your phone and say, that person, we all know that person, I'm going to put them into my phone and this week, I'm going to take 2 minutes on the bus, I'm going to take 2 minutes in the car and just pray for them. I wonder if there's some people, and I'm not recommending this for everybody, there's some people in your life who have maybe hurt you and they're dangerous to be around, but for the people that you can, I wonder if there's ways that you can actually bless them. I wonder if there's ways, if possible, that you can be in their life. And you've got to walk that and navigate that for what that means for you. But hey, I wonder, even starting with prayer, what could happen if we even just determined and considered and said, you know what, I'm going to be the type of person who just prays for them. And all of a sudden, maybe, I'm not promising it to you, but maybe some of those feelings will actually catch up with the fact and the decision that you've made to forgive. So I think that's why Jesus says in Luke 6, if you're willing, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you. What if you just only spoke well of that person? What if you didn't perpetuate your offense onto everybody else? Yeah, they hurt me, but you know what? They're good people because they're God's child. Maybe that's all you can come up with. Maybe that's all you can find is like they're God's child. They're breathing air. Like, yeah, so they're loved. But you know what, though? That's a whole lot better than slander. It's a whole lot better than bringing other people into your offense, because it's crazy what can happen in a secondary offense, that you can actually deal with your stuff and then somebody else is holding an offense to somebody that they've never been offended by. But anyway, that's a different talk. But you see what I'm saying? Now, this is my problem with all of this, is it's great to say this, and hopefully this is all helping, because I'm not dismissing everything that I've said. But there's places when I look at my life that I just can't do that. There's places in my life that I'm not ready to do that. What do we do then? You know, I was reading a story, and I'd chosen to do this sermon before what happened in Texas, and so I hope that I'm not being insensitive or anything like that. But a couple years ago in Charleston, there was a senseless act of violence, and I was watching the interviews of these people and the family members who had lost family members, children, sons, daughters, uncles, aunts, were talking to this young man who had committed these atrocities, and I'll never forget this one lady. She said this to him. She said, "I forgive you. You took something really precious away from me. I'll never talk to her ever again. I'll never be able to hold her again, but I forgive you and have mercy on your soul. It hurts me. It hurts a lot of people, but God forgave you, and I forgive you." And that reminds me of what it says in Colossians 3 when Paul says, "Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone." But then he says, "Forgive as the Lord forgave you." This is my last point, and hopefully my encouragement to those hard places to forgive. We forgive because we've first been forgiven. We forgive because we've first been forgiven. I think maybe the best way to illustrate this whole point is talking about an interaction that Jesus has with a young lady in Luke 7. Jesus has been on his ministry tour. He's talking to all of these different people, and these Pharisees, these religious leaders, have invited Jesus over to their house. So he comes in, they're hanging out. It was customary that the crowd could actually gather around inside the parlor room. And so they're having this meeting, and Jesus is talking to these religious people. And all of a sudden, this lady bursts into this room, and she starts wiping Jesus' feet with her tears and with her hair. And she takes this alabaster jar full of perfume that some would actually say was worth like almost a year's salary. And so she's pouring this out on Jesus' feet. So this is the thing, though, is Luke actually looks at this story and says that this lady was a sinner. And everybody knew it. So it says in Luke 39, it says, "When the Pharisees who invited him saw all of this happening, they said to themselves, 'If this man were a prophet, he would know that who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner.'" So off the bat, we already know, and the crowd knows, that this lady has some baggage. This lady is like one of the people that everybody knows. She's done some stuff, and yet she's here in front of Jesus, this rabbi, this prophet, and she's crying and wiping his feet and putting perfume and oils on them. And then Jesus doesn't even look at these Pharisees' criticism. This is what he starts to say to Peter. He looks over at Peter and he says, "Hey, if two people owed money, one owed 500, one owed 50, and both of those debts got forgiven, who's going to love that person more?" He says, "Well, obviously the guy who got more debt, like, you know, forgiven, the 500. And Jesus says, "Yeah, exactly." And he doesn't respond to their criticism, but this is where Jesus polarizes the room even more. Listen to what he says. He says in verse 47, "Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love is shown." In some translations it says, "She's forgiven much because she loved much. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." That would have been a scandalous statement. She hadn't offered a sacrifice to God. She hadn't done all of the ceremonial rituals. Jesus is just saying, "You're forgiven." And listen to how this splits the room. Listen to the difference between how the room reacts and what this lady walks away with. The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." See, I think that ultimately this story shows how we approach God. And I wonder, where are you in the room? You know, this whole crowd of people was looking at this whole situation happening and not recognizing their need for forgiveness, not recognizing who Jesus was, not recognizing that he could actually forgive them. They looked at Jesus and could only question him and say, "How could he forgive that? How could you ever forgive something like that? I mean, that's way too far to forgive." And yet this young lady finds herself in the middle of the room with a need for Jesus. She says, I don't have anything. I don't have much. This is what I have. And I need you. And Jesus says, see, she's forgiven. And see, when you actually have a love like that, when you realize how forgiven you are, it actually creates the space and the place in the grace to forgive those people who are hard to forgive. But I think sometimes when we're trying to forgive everybody else, we're actually on the corner of the room not realizing how forgiven we've been. And so the only question in life we can ever ask is, how could he do that? How could you forgive that? No, but how could you get over that? Because I have the right. You don't know what they did. You don't know what I've experienced. And you're right, I don't. And I'm not trying to quantify it, and I'm not trying to belittle it. But where are you in the room? Before you look at them, how forgiven are you? Because this is what I know, is that Jesus takes our mess. Where we don't have anything to give, where we don't have it all together, we can pretend like we do. We can be on the walls. We can look at it like we do and kind of have a distant relationship with him, but always just being questioning, well, who is he really? But when you get close to him in the middle of the room, you start to realize how good he really is, how much he really loves you. And I think that that's the only thing that uniquely gives us the space to be able to forgive those people who have wronged us, those people who have sinned against us. And I think that that's the place where the gospel becomes beautiful, where church becomes something different than anything else. Well, how can these people say this and be so generous and so forgiving? It only points to a Savior who first forgave us. I just think it's time for some of us to make a decision. I just think it's time for some of us to say, okay, like maybe today your thing isn't going, okay, I'm gonna forgive this person. Maybe it's just realizing how forgiven you are. In the mess of your life, Jesus comes and he finds you and he uniquely sees you and knows you and says, I still love you. Man, I think a type of grace like that's infectious. A type of forgiveness like that can't just be kept to ourselves. And that's where I think as a Christian community, we ought to be the most generous, forgiving people. And when people walk into a community like this, it only points to God. Like nobody but God can do something like that, because we first know before we could do anything like that, before we could strive or try to achieve through might this kind of, this self-will to forgive, we just actually need to go, no, we've been forgiven.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about MyChurch, including locations and service times, visit our website. And if you'd like to support the ministry of MyChurch financially, you can do so by following the giving link at livelove.ca. Thank you for partnering with us. We pray this message has blessed and encouraged you.